podcast is just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah. Hey, hey, welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. I'm Wesley Sykes, and through the other side of the ether is the Rama Tut to my Victor Timely. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, variant for hire.
I am very excited to discuss this show today. This is, I'll give this away right now. I like this more than season one.
Yes, and we may have flip-flopped here, but not by much, because while some people may be reviewing the Marvels this week, we are flip-flopping and reviewing season two of Loki, the 42nd installment of the MCU series now streaming on Disney+. We'll do the Marvels next week, but before all that, Nick, this is an important question that I've been meaning to ask you for some time now. How do you eat your muffins? This isn't a sexual innuendo or euphemism or anything, just an actual muffin, a bran muffin, a blueberry muffin, chocolate chip muffin,
you know, if
banana nut muffin.
If it was an innuendo, I wouldn't know what you're going for, quite honestly. I can take a guess. I will say it depends. Coffee cake muffin, I definitely eat the whole top first. Sometimes I'll pick at the top as well. Mm-hmm. That one's obviously a little bit messier. But any other muffin pretty much that isn't as messy, I start with the top. I take like a big bite out of the top, then I peel the wrapping at the bottom, and then I will dig in on the bottom and kind of work my way around navigating between the top and the bottom. I don't always just do all of the top, but sometimes that does happen.
Interesting here. So I kind of take like a Seinfeld approach, where I take the top off the muffin, I separate it. And this is, I find this is helpful, especially when you're in the car. Maybe if you're getting a blueberry muffin from your Dunkin' Donuts, your Starbucks, your local coffee spot, and you don't want to make too much of a mess. So then I separate and I put that off to the side. I put the top of the muffin to the side. I save that for last. It's the best part. It's usually where it's a little bit more solid there. And then I'll peel off the wrapper on the bottom and then eat it regularly. Take bites out of the bottom there. But I'll break the top off and then eat that in pieces here.
Okay.
And I asked because the other day I got some muffins for my wife and I for the house one morning, and I saw that she had ate just like taken a couple bites and eaten half the muffin straight down, just like eating it almost like an apple. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so strange.
Yeah, I mean,
almost barbaric.
It's that's kind of what I was describing. Like I do kind of I sometimes do that. Not with a coffee cake, though. Again, coffee cake, you can't do that. But I was curious why.
Crumbly.
More than anything, I was curious why the hell you were asking this question. It's like, it's either got to be because of the missus, or he just watched the Top of the Muffin episode of Seinfeld.
No, that's how I've always eaten. In fact, I saw that from a kid who used to drive me to school. He would get Dunkin' Donuts, and then he would flatten out the bag, the Dunkin' Donuts bag, and that's kind of his serving plate that's on his lap while he's driving. Okay. Mm-hmm. This guy would drive a stick and do all this too, by the
way.
What? Pretty impressive.
Wow.
So, you know, whoever was riding shotgun, sometimes his younger brother, sometimes it was me, he would have us flip off the top, you know, break the top off for him. And then from there, he would take it over. And then he would find that would be less mess. And I've adopted that technique, and I can confirm that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I was not aware.
You know, it's not a typical question. You know, sometimes, you know, everyone wants to know how you eat your pizza. You know, maybe your pasta. Do you twirl your pasta? Do you use a spoon? Do you fold your pizza? That sort of thing. Or you know, do you save the crust for last? Whatever it may be. But muffins, I think, is an interesting thing.
It is. And I totally understand the eat the whole top of the muffin separately from the bottom. And I'm sorry, you said you will eat the bottom first and then have the top.
Always. Yeah.
It's
the best part of the muffin.
I understand that logic. Like I couldn't do eat all the top first and then eat all the bottom because the top is obviously the best part. And I don't want to go and waste that. That's why I kind of like doing the alternating, because then it's like, okay, I'm getting like a mix of the two. I like the bottom, but you know, I appreciate the top all the more as I kind of alternate.
It's good to know. We're top guys on the CMM podcast here. Mm-hmm. That's good to know. No power bottoms here. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's problematic sometimes, yeah.
But that's another Seinfeld reference to bookend that there. So there, I feel like that's a good spot to end it. Let's shift over to trending now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Well, speaking of shifting, we have Marvel reshuffling some movie release dates here. So we have Deadpool 3, which had survived the last reshuffling, which was, maybe a month ago. I feel like we were just talking about this. But it didn't survive this one. Deadpool 3 got pushed back to next year, July 26th of next year. In fact, the only movie that's being released by the MCU in 2024. Now we have tentative times for Captain America. This is New World Order here, but Brave New World is the title. February 14th, 2025. Fantastic Four, May 2nd, 2025. This doesn't make sense because this the only movies of the five that we're mentioning that doesn't have a cast yet, or at least not announced.
Right.
So I don't know how that's going to work. Thunderbolts, July 25th, 2025, and then Blade, the very under duress. I don't know if I've used that word correctly. Project there coming out November 7th, 2025.
Okay. Look, Blade does not need to only be in October. But if you have things planned out, why are you not releasing this in September or early October to maximize on everybody being interested in spooky season stuff?
I agree. This is, probably the first weekend. I wonder what else is coming out that month. If there's anything else that's really, I don't know, they don't want to compete with. So they want to have this kind of stand on its own. But I still think the fall season, November, is a good time for Blade. I agree. I would say the first time would be that month of October. This might be the second, maybe only to Valentine's Day. With the whole vampire love thing, I feel like you can kind of play off that a little bit.
Well, maybe you could do that. In general though, like with everything that's going on, okay, it makes sense. I mean, there's the writer's strike that only ended fairly recently, and now the SAG after strike
is at an
end. So it makes sense that all these things kind of got pushed back. And honestly, when it comes to Deadpool, and if that's the biggest reason that all these other ones got pushed back because Deadpool, that I'm totally fine with that. Like, I don't – where there were so many limitations because of the two strikes that were going on, we need the best of the best when it comes to Deadpool. And, like, we need – like, where the whole – the whole subject of like Ryan Reynolds can't like ad lib or improvise while the writer's strike is going on and filming Deadpool. That's just okay. Then don't film Deadpool till it's all done. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely here. And then again, yeah, any sort of retooling or back to the drawing board, like you said, after the strikes have ended. And then also this recent sling of bad news that's come from Marvel. Maybe that's causing them to kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit. So I'm okay with this. I think we've said for some time, I think you might agree with this, is that, it feels like Marvel Disney is just spread thin with all the TV shows that they committed to. And then the amount of movies that have come out, there was, I think during its heyday, phase 3, phase 4, you were getting maybe 4 movies a year.
Four. I felt like 3 is probably the right number. But yeah, it's like, as much as I have not complained about quality as much as the average Marvel fan these days, there's no question that quantity has been such a huge, like, they're trying to get while the getting's good right now. There's no question about it. And I understand that to an extent, but at the same time, we're seeing that, like, it's been a little bit too much.
Yeah. Yeah. For the average person. So I think if they step back, maybe get out of the spotlight, maybe that can, they can do themselves some favors there.
Doing just the one movie in 2024 and have it just be Deadpool, honestly, is a pretty good idea from try and create a little bit of desire there. And it's just going to depend on how many shows they roll out to. I don't know if maybe Daredevil's the only one that we're seeing next
year. I was just thinking between now and, let's say, Captain America Brave New World, what only comes to mind is Echo and Deadpool 3, and maybe Daredevil. Maybe those reshoots get in before then there. I would imagine before. Yeah. I think that's doable there, but who knows? More Marvel news here, just constantly in the news cycle here.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
We mentioned at the top that we're not reviewing the Marvels this week. perhaps one of the first Marvel movies in a long time that we haven't seen on its opening weekend here, actually. Yeah. And I would attribute that more to just timing with Loki season two ending and then our schedules more than anything. But
only reason
we're not, you know, we're in the majority, I would say, here with people who chose not to go see the movie this weekend. It pulled an 88.5 million worldwide, 47 domestic. This is per Box Office Mojo. I saw a couple other numbers coming around there, so it might be closer to 100 million, 110 million worldwide, maybe like low 50s. But this was per Box Office Mojo, so this is coming in lower than The Flash of 55 million opening weekend. 2008's Incredible Hulk, which had 55.5 million, and 2015's Ant-Man, which is 57.2. So this is the lowest opening weekend for an MCU project.
Yeah, it's insane. It's at some point these things, we know, like, you're gonna, like, things were trending downward. And if you had asked me based on all the other stuff that we saw come out, all the different ones that were like different movies that have been lined up over the past few years, okay, I mean, it does make sense. I mean, Captain Marvel wasn't beloved beforehand. And also, Captain Marvel
did make $1 billion, though. Did make a billion-dollar film, yeah.
But it's still, like, I still wouldn't say she was ever a beloved character. And obviously, that there was a lot of, like, unnecessary controversy around the first movie. And then with Marvel being down, you combine those two things, it makes sense that this happened. Like, it seemed like it was doomed to do this. But at the same time, where we're seeing some ratings not great, there's also one number that jumps out to me.
Yeah, so this received to this point a 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb, a 62-84 split on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 2.9 out of 5 on Google reviews, with a little more than half, 55% of Google users liking this movie.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, where sometimes the numbers get so cartoonish that it's like, I don't trust them at all. I will say the 62-84 split on Rotten Tomatoes, as much as we, you know how much I don't like Rotten Tomatoes, those numbers sound right to me. Based on based on the positive reviews that I've seen from the Marvels, it sounds like this is something that critics probably could take or leave. Totally fine with that. Like, I get that. It's going to happen sometimes. There are certain movies where you don't want to see that. With this, okay. When I see that 84, it's like, okay, so this is not this critical masterpiece, or not reinventing the genre or anything like that, or moving crazy way. But it's a fun time. Okay.
And I wonder, I listened to some spoiler-free reviews and from YouTubers and stuff like that, just to kind of see what the reaction was. And it was interesting because I think, like you said, no one wants to be, aside from the base that is like that kind of toxic fan base, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I think there is maybe an urge by your average reviewer or movie critic to not want to do that. So I feel like some of the reviews are going soft mm-hmm. on the Marvels, if that makes sense, in an attempt to not get folded in or lumped in with that crowd.
That could be.
Do you know what I mean? So I wonder if some of the critics who were like, it's just okay, if it's just all right, like if it was, I don't know, let's say Ant-Man 3 or whatever, another movie that didn't have like all of the extra social commentary around it that this movie does for whatever reason, right? Maybe they'd be more, you know, taking the gloves off sort of thing.
Maybe. But how do you view a 62 on Rotten Tomatoes? I know it's sure. I know that's fresh. Technically, yeah,
it's not good. I would say it's like 75 and above. I'm take my average grade in school, you know, anything 75 or above, I'll take.
Yeah. I mean, and look, and it's, everything's on we talk about like how sometimes, you know, like we view like there's a Marvel standard sometimes, and I don't always abide by that, but then like versus DC versus like other movies that are out there, may have different level of expectation just because of different people involved. For me, a 62, like unless it's a comedy or a horror, that's not good. Like that means like the critics think it's like fine at best. And for any Marvel movie, you don't generally want fine at best. So I still look at that as like, okay, like maybe you're right. Maybe they went a little bit off the gas with like how hard they wanted to be, but they still didn't go and praise this thing. And then and then 84, that I'm like, that tells me, okay, like it, to me, it almost justifies the 62 in the sense of like, okay, this is like a fun time, but it's not this great thing. So I guess I get the huge gap on this one based on everything I've heard from the positive side of things.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with you on that. So I'm still interested to see, although, again, I don't think this movie is necessarily for me. I'm hoping for, like what you said, just to have a fun time with it and try not to let any, like, other opinions kind of soak into me here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've ever since that first trailer, I was like, okay, this... Before everybody was, like, outwardly trashing, I was like, I don't care. Like, okay, it's fine. Like, I'm going to see it, but like, this is not something I'm like asking for or I'm dying for. Like, I liked the Miss Marvel show. Captain Marvel was good. I think that was one of the first Marvel movies we reviewed on here.
I
liked it a lot more, I think, at that time. I have no, on rewatch, I think I gave it a pretty good grade, but it dipped. Anyways, that first trailer that we saw and then things that ensued, I was like, okay, this actually looks like it could be a really friggin' fun time.
Yeah, it looks fun. And again, everything I've heard is Iman Vellani once again kind of steals the show. She's very charming in her almost Peter Parker Civil War like role, where it's like kind of fangirl meeting the heroes and stuff like that, kind of living out her dream. So
yeah,
I'm excited for it. So that is the Marvels, but we got a little bit more in trending now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this all over the internet. The trailer for Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon, A Child of Fire. Trailer number 2 was released yesterday. The movie hits Netflix December 22nd, and the follow-up, Rebel Moon, The Scar Giver, hits Netflix on April 19th of 2024. So you get a pretty quick conclusion there, which I personally like. And if you're going to be doing a part one to part two type thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And keep it close.
Yeah. And especially when you're doing when you're doing something on Netflix or any of the other streaming services where you kind of have that power, or if you've been filming it at the same time, all that different shit. But I'm like, I was excited for this when the first trailer dropped. You were as well, right? Cause we were talking about beforehand. I was okay.
I like Zack Snyder, you know, like he's almost like Sam Raimi in the sense where, you know, what you're getting from him. Sure. You know, he's going to hit all of his stylistic points or his color palettes or slow motion or everything like that. There's certain signatures to a Zack Snyder movie that hasn't necessarily worn on me like it may have for others. Mm-hmm. So I think this looks good. And again, I like the Star Wars movies. I like the Guardians of the Galaxy. I like these kind of space odysseys here. This seems pretty interesting. And I also liked that they didn't show the lightsabers again, because that was, I felt like, the big takeaway, or what lasted with me at least on the first trailer. And then it's immediately, you know, making me draw the comparisons to Star Wars, when it maybe could just live on its own.
Gotcha. So when I saw that, and then we heard all the lightsaber specifically, I was actually really excited about it, because I was like, okay, then to find out this was Snyder wanted to do a Star Wars movie, and then he got turned down. Okay. And now he's doing his own thing. Interesting. So the gloves can kind of come off in terms of how gritty he wants to get. And obviously we know he loves to go there. So I was open to that very much from the jump. And then we see, you know, we don't see the lightsabers, like you said, in this one, or whatever the hell they technically have to call them. But, the first trailer, or this full trailer here, very promising. I'm very excited for this. And there is going to be, I think it's a prequel series. I tweeted about it a while back, from Titan Comics, for the Rebel Moon series. So if anybody that's interested in checking that out, or maybe it's a single issue prequel issue. That might be what it was. I might pick it up. We'll see. I'm not entirely certain, but that's coming out soon. I tweeted it out. If you follow me on Twitter, you will have all that information somewhere.
Okay. All right. I like the lead actress in that. She's very easy on the eyes there, but I miss her without her blade legs in the Kingsman.
That's where she's from. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. That was bugging me. Yeah, we got her. We got Francis from Deadpool, who's like an evil looking Nick Holt. And then
Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm excited to see Charlie Hunnam in this. And then, oh God. Oh, from, for those who have seen, what was it? The Haunting at Hill House. One of the male siblings, the older brother, is also in this. And I feel like, isn't Yellowjacket in this too? Am I correct in that? From Ant-Man?
Oh, really? Oh, I don't know. Darren Cross? I don't know.
I think I saw him. I think I saw him in the in that trailer.
It's a star-studded cast if Darren Cross is in it.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some like notable faces.
Right.
I could be mistaken. Sorry, I'm trying to find it as I'm like talking here, and I'm not having any.
Yeah, either way, again, I think this is great timing. December 22nd. This is going to be, it looks very good. Again, I'm a fan of the color palette, but December 22nd, perfect release. Nick and I were talking about this before going to air. You know, that Christmas time release, it works so well for Wonder Woman 84. I think that was a plus, even though it wasn't that great of a movie, but everyone kind of sit and watch it at their own pace. Speaking of watching it at their own pace, you could do the same thing with The Irishman that was released, you know, right around that same holiday season there. So, you know, you didn't have to sit down 4 hours. I also think, maybe I'm wrong here, was Justice League also released during the holidays?
That may be the case, but I'm not certain.
Yeah,
maybe. But thank you for giving me a little bit of time to look this up. I was right. Corey Stahl is in this. And then the guy who plays the wizard in Shazam, he's in like everything.
Oh, it's like
Hansu.
Jimon Hansu. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's in this. Anthony Hopkins is in this.
I thought that sounded like him. He kind of looked like Odin at the end.
Okay. And
he
then
had all the antlers and the, yeah. Okay.
And then there's a girl from the Hunger Games. Like one of the later ones. There's quite a few people who I recognize that, makes me very hopeful for this.
All right. So, yeah. So, you know, we got something to do around Christmas time before maybe you're sitting around the fire, sitting by the tree, having some eggnog. Mm-hmm. Fire up Rebel Moon.
Yeah. How about that?
Damn, son. Where'd you find this?
This came out last week, but this is kind of going into Nick's comic book minute here. So I'm gonna throw things off to Nick for this one here. What's the last trending now that we got?
Yeah, we got a live action Zelda coming our way. Of course, this is Nintendo. It was officially announced to be in development, like not too long after we recorded our most recent episode, and I'm very excited for this. And I would think it seemed like everybody else was excited. I will admit, though, when I first saw it, I was just like, okay, we're getting a Zelda movie. I thought it was going to be animated because of Mario, the success there.
Sure, yeah.
Keep going, riding that animation train. And then I'm seeing, oh, no, it's going to be live action? Okay. Like, you can definitely, I would think you can make that work. But I just, like, when you have this, I don't know. I know we don't need everything to bleed into everything else. Doesn't need to have everything have its connective tissue. I'm the first one to say that we don't need that. Mm-hmm. But you just had this success with Mario. Why aren't you just going to try and replicate it, you know, and do its own thing, but replicate it here with Zelda?
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that until you just mentioned it, the live action version. I just assumed that it was going to be animated. In fact, I thought I saw somewhere that Chris Pratt was going to be voicing it, but maybe I got duped there again. Maybe that was a little meme going around on the interwebs there. But
probably,
that's how. Again, I'm not a huge Zelda fan, not a huge video game fan, but this seems kind of interesting. But I think there's a huge risk reward factor when you're talking about live action, right? Because I think that's the same issue that Uncharted fell into, Tomb Raider, some of these like adventure, maybe it's not role playing games so much, but Zelda might be, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass here, but these like long story form video games don't always transition into the live action big screen.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm not saying that people like who love Zelda or love high fantasy in general aren't going to be interested in checking this out just because it's live action versus animation. Like, I think they're going to see it no matter what. I'm going to see it more than likely no matter what, unless we find out like this is just really, really bad before it hits the masses. But it just seems like an odd decision after the success of Mario. And I haven't read this article, but I saw this right before we started the stream from Rolling Stone headline. Nintendo's Legend of Zelda movie is already raising red flags, which is this came out on November 11th. So that's a good sign. Animated, please.
This is okay. So here's the thought that was just running through my mind here. I want, maybe Zelda doesn't connect with a younger crowd like Super Mario Brothers does. You know, like how many Zelda games have there been that the, I don't know, maybe Gen Z plays, you know? So I don't know. So maybe this is an opportunity for, you know, to satisfy the older Zelda fans. Maybe. That they can go live action. Maybe they can go, I don't want to say gritty. I feel like that can be an overused term, but a little bit darker, something like that. A little more adult themed than tying into that, you know, childlike Super Mario world.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. And we have reached our gritty quota for the day, I will say. But I want to know.
Mention it a couple more times,
more than likely. But I will say, like, I know, like, I'm talking about animation with Mario and how that was a kids movie, but man, like, anime is one of the biggest things going right now, and mm-hmm. that animation, and there's a lot of, like, they are vicious in anime, like the yeah. violence in those things. Like, I watched the first Clash on Titan, I think is what one of the most popular anime there is out there. It was so violent. Like, I didn't go back. I could not bring myself to do it. It was that friggin' vicious. And
wow,
now,
okay.
Chime told me that it gets easier to swallow, but it was friggin' brutal, man. Like how violent it was. So you can get, I don't want to use the G word because I feel like we need to save a few more. Like said, but you can go there for sure with animation.
Okay. All right there. Well, I'm excited to see what turns up of it, whether it's live action, whether it's animated, whether it's Chris Pratt voicing it or Chris Pratt starring in it. I don't know. Well, I'm excited for it all. I'm also excited for the Comic Book Minute, which is starting right now. And say goodbye to
A superb choice.
By Twitter. So for the Comic Book Minute this week, we got Ghost Rider issue 20, Dark X-Men issue 4. I've been saying this for a little while now, but if you are a Gambit fan like myself and you've been waiting for some really good Gambit stuff consistently, because you get it mixed in here and there, but like just consistently week to week, Dark X-Men has been really good so far. I haven't had a chance to read issue 4, but I will before TLDR this week. From Image Comics, we got The Return of Killadelphia, issue 31, and we got Deviant, issue 1, which is a story from James Tynion, the fourth one of Doc's favorite writers. But Killadelphia has been one of the biggest titles going right now, not just at Image Comics, but in all comics in general. And one thing that they did recently at the end, I'm sure, Wes, you don't mind me spoiling this for you.
No,
but
not
the
at all.
End of last arc, they added Spawn to the mix. Todd McFarlane Spawn is now in this story, and then we're getting some other characters who are getting thrown into. Spawn is on the cover of Killadelphia 31. Really love what they did in this issue. Really excited for the future of Killadelphia. Didn't need Spawn to get thrown in the mix, but of course I am very excited about it. So awesome stuff there. And then lastly, from AWA, we got Rumpus Room issue 3, which you would appreciate the story, Wes, because it's like a billionaire who has people keeping people who have pissed him off, even in the slightest capacity, being kept in a cell below his house. And
do know me well. This is a type of level of pettiness that I do like.
And then all the way to the end, where all the conspiracy stuff, he's killing the people down there, and having, by killing them, he is turning their remains, I don't know which remains exactly, into a facial cream that helps keep him young.
Wow. Now, have you heard that there are women, I'm sure there's men out there too, but this is predominantly a woman's product, who uses the skin of the foreskin. I don't know if it's, I think it's when they get snipped, and it's made into a cream, and it's a face cream, and it's supposed to be like an anti-aging cream.
I feel like I've heard that from you.
Oh, really?
Yes. I feel like that's where I've heard of it.
I've heard this mentioned before. Now, I might be talking out of my ass here, so I don't know enough about it, but I have heard this reference before.
I feel like I heard it in like a movie or a show one time, like for like with like as part of a plot or whatever. I feel like
keep going with this.
But anyways,
foreskin facial cream.
Okay.
This is a war computer.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. We're good. I think we've covered.
I think I'm okay here.
Rumpus Room issue 3. It's been, the series has been awesome through the first 3 issues. There's 5 in total. And then for TLDR this week, Joe is doing a Brubaker Phillips series, which I typically am the one that does those, but that is definitely in Joe's wheelhouse. So I'm excited to hear about that book. And then I am going to be talking about Peacemaker Tries Hard, which is a 6-issue Black Label series. If you like the Peacemaker show, you will like Peacemaker Tries Hard. It was an awesome series. I really had a fun time with it. But I'll get into that more in detail on TLDR this week.
All right. Are you ready for the main topic, Nick?
I'm ready for your music. What do we got?
Tommy, are you ready for the main topic?
All right. Now let's go get him.
Oh, it didn't. It cut out.
Why does that happen sometimes? I don't understand it. Like, it's not a you thing. It's a StreamYard thing.
Let's yeah, try again. I don't know.
All right. Now let's go get him.
There Thank you, Tommy. Yeah, we're ready to do it now here. I was thinking about doing Time Keeps On Slipping into the Future. But then I saw Mac and Goo do it, and I was like, I can't do that. Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah. Well, they were singing it. They, you know, Goo actually can carry a tune, unlike myself here. So, but nevertheless, Loki Season 2. Nick, what is the synopsis here?
Okay, along with Mobius, Hunter B-15, and a team of new and returning characters, Loki navigates an ever-expanding and increasingly dangerous multiverse in a search of Sylvie, Judge Renslayer, Miss Minutes, and the truth of what it means to possess free will and glorious purpose.
And glorious purpose here, yes. This is created by Michael Waldron, starring Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Owen Wilson as Mobius, who is just delightful. Sophia DiMartino as Sylvie. Womni Masaku as Hunter B-15. Gugu Mbatha-Raw as Ravana Renslayer. Eugene Cordero as Casey. Neil Elise as Hunter D-90. Tara Strong voicing Miss Minutes. Ki Huy Quan as OB or Boris. Jonathan Majors as He Who Remains. Raphael Casal as Brad Wolf or Hunter M something. I don't know. I forget what his name was.
Was it five?
Something like that. Yeah, he had it tattooed on himself there. Hmm. Kate Dickey as General Docs and Liz Carr as Judge Gamble.
Okay. And then obviously we don't have any box office numbers for shows, but for the critics, this got an 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb and has an 81-81 split on Rotten Tomatoes, 4.8 out of 5 on Google reviews with 89% of Google users liking this movie. Now, this is again one where I'm surprised by, like, 4.8 out of 5. It's almost a 5 out of 5
it's
series.
It's near perfect.
But only 89% of the people liked it.
Yeah.
It's like the math doesn't add up.
Yeah, that's interesting there. Now, while we don't have box office numbers for a TV show, I think I did read that this was maybe on its premiere or maybe overall. Again, don't quote me on this here, but I thought I saw that it was 40% lower viewership numbers than season one.
Really?
I thought so. Yeah. That's, which is surprising to me, but
it's crazy. I mean, look, there's no question that, like, hey, while I don't suffer from Marvel fatigue, I mean, like, I know you've battled with it from time to time.
And, I need a prescription.
And I think that where you're at is far different from where everybody else is at. Clearly, look, those numbers dropped off. Like, for all the frustration about the multiverse and how we're not getting shit and everything, like, I didn't love Loki like everybody else, but Loki delivered that element better than anybody else.
I also wonder if people are just canceling Disney Plus.
That's fair.
You know, just because the app isn't great. I saw ads recently that they're rolling it into Hulu. It's all, you can all get like your ESPN Plus, your Hulu and your Disney Plus all in one, payment package there, which great a bundle, you know, you're just going to be selling cable at one point, but that's a topic for another discussion. But I wonder if just people aren't like, as prices get increased for all these streaming services, they're like, all right, let's make a cut somewhere.
The prices are getting like, I mean, it's everywhere across the board they're raising. And then on top of that, like everybody's saying like, oh, we're gonna they're gonna take away the password sharing and stuff like that. Have they already done it?
I think my mom uses my our Netflix and YouTube TV accounts and everything like that. So sometimes I got to go over there. I don't know if that's just her being a boomer old lady who can't work her TV anymore, but I have to like log her back into Netflix sometimes because it doesn't register or just might kick her out. Or you have to do like two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
So like I have to take a photo from my phone, which is linked to the account of the TV screen to get the QR code, to get the okay to go in. It's like a whole pain in the ass.
Yeah. My pain in the ass is my dad never writes down passwords. Mm-hmm. So we share a few things, and every time, like, he doesn't have to do it a ton. Like, he's better about it now, but like, he has to ask me what passwords are for certain things. And I'm like, you are the one, like, what the fuck, man?
Well, now you know how I feel when you and Billy D text me all the time. Hey, send me the StreamYard code.
God, no, I legitimately feel bad every time.
I'm just giving you shit on that.
No, I know, but I feel bad every time that I have to do it. I mean, and it's, yeah. Anyways.
No, it's no problem at all. Happy to do it. And I'm also happy to hear your score and your tweet length review.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. So I gave this an 89 out of 100. This takes what the first season of Loki started and does so much more. Glorious ending. Only flaw, this season gets a little bit convoluted from time to time.
I would say a lot of bit there, but I think we're closer than what our score might even indicate here, because I give this an 86 out of 100, which is still pretty close. But I reading your review compared to mine, I think we're like saying the same exact thing. The premiere series of the MCU, Loki season 2 did what others couldn't, end the series on a satisfying note. It's highlighted by great performances and set design. Loki season 2 tells an effective story, though it was nebulous and at times a little dull.
So I think I can speak for you when I say this, but I don't keep track of the reasons I deduct points on a show or a movie, because I always say, like, I started at 95 and you have to earn those extra 5 points, and that usually does not happen. But I can say, like, I can't throw a number at it, but of the, what I guess, 6 points that were lost from starting at 95, if not all of them, the majority of them were the result of, like, how this was, like the explanation of some of the shit was just so, like, huh?
Yeah, and some of it is, there's a lot of explanation in this, and sometimes it's really great and riveting, like we got in episode 6 and a little bit of episode 5 with the backstories there, but, like, you know, I think of 2, 3, and 4, it really started to lose me. I'm like, all right, where are we going here? There are some good moments from it. I think the 1893 episode is definitely a standout there for a couple of reasons. But it was like frustratingly slow at times.
Yeah, there was definitely some moments where it didn't, like, the pacing might have been off. I think it's like some of these explanations that we kind of get into. I feel like mine, I loved episode 6, but I feel like maybe it was episode 5 where I kind of got, episode 5. Anyways, there were definitely times mixed in throughout where I was just like, okay, you're explaining this so fast that, like, I don't mind it. Like, especially with OB or Timely, you could kind of get away with it at moments.
Yeah. Well, Timely doesn't do anything.
No,
Timely.
You're right. He doesn't. But the way he is, you could get away with it.
Yeah.
It's still, I'm still like, yeah, but this is all kind of, like, messy. Like, Loki brings it all together in the end, and obviously He Who Remains, like, just kind of answers it all, like, in a simple manner. So it all works, but it makes the tail chasing, like, make even more sense looking back on it. But still, at times, it was just like, wow, this is, like, what the fuck is going on?
It's kind of in the sense, like, when we reviewed Tenet, when we braved our souls during COVID to go see it, where it's like, I understand what's going on, and I get it, but explaining it's going to be a little tough. Like, if we get down to the nitty gritty, almost like an Endgame too, when you talk about going back in time and we're coming back and forth like that.
But what do you think when you compare this to Endgame and explaining, like, obviously we're talking about two different things, but similar still. I mean, there is time travel in this one with Loki. Do you find that, which was not necessarily more confusing, which one was easier to accept and take in between
Endgame? I ultimately accepted both here, but when you start dealing with multiversal time where time is no longer linear, and then you can just, like, not also go forwards and backwards, but you can go left and right to other timelines, you know what I mean? Like,
true.
That's when you get this, like, multi-directional angle there. That's crazy for me.
I feel like the Endgame one was definitely simpler, but I felt like Loki's was, as much as it was so complex and complicated, it didn't feel like anything was done wrong in the way. Nothing was, like, yada 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 over. Maybe it would have been helpful if some of it was yada 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 over, but, like, it's not, it wasn't, Where, again, I'm fine with what they did in Endgame. I love Endgame, but it's like, this is it. Like, don't overthink it. With Loki, it's like, right, there's so much fucking shit going on, and we cannot figure out what the fuck it is. Mm-hmm. We're as confused as you are. Like, it all kind of, like, fits perfectly. I feel like it's done a little bit better, as much as I wouldn't prefer this in Endgame, because it was a long enough movie on its own.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the stakes were too much, too, you know? Like,
yes.
You can't dance around too much with
it. No. But then, and then Tenet's an interesting one that you bring into the mix, too, because I feel like Tenet... Okay, Endgame's easier to explain than any of them, but Tenet, I think, could be easier to explain than Loki outside of the He Who Remains stuff, but it's also more of a mindfuck, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't even want to get too deep into it, because I feel like I'm already exposing myself as a big old dummy. I'm just going to keep saying yes to you. But nevertheless, that 89-86 score gives us a CMM aggregate of 87.5, which is in a three-way tie with Hawkeye, the original Iron Man, and Loki. Hawkeye breaks that tie with the highest individual score. Iron Man and Loki Season 2, virtually identical, same exact scores by both Nick and I. In comparison, Loki Season 1 is number 13th with an 87-92 split for an 89.5. And I feel very comfortable with how those two shows are ranked. If we were to go back and do a re-ranking of anything, I don't think I would change those. I feel like they're both really good seasons of television, but for me, Season 2 is just slightly under Season 1.
It would be an interesting study to like go and like re-rank them, like without looking at our scores, just like, here's the whole list of everything we've gotten. How are you as individuals put it together, and what does our list come out as? Is it the same as what we've gotten watching all of these, you know, on a rewatch or first time through, whatever? But Loki, obviously the ending of the first season was crazy. It was amazing. I didn't love the rest of it. I didn't think it was like poorly done. It just didn't do it for me. Part of the reason is I'm not as much of a Mobius guy as you are. Like, that's flat out.
Yeah. Well, that will have a big effect one way or the other. Right. Yeah.
100%. But like, still, like, these are very much on a similar level. I just feel like this is better this round.
All right. Well, let's dive into it with the exit survey. Nick, we discussed this a little bit here. I think we're on the same page. Favorite episode of the 6-episode season?
It's the finale. I thought it was perfect for the character.
Yeah,
I don't know if you said this already. I might have just skipped my mind. But for a reminder for anybody who's new to the show, this is a spoiler-filled podcast. Obviously, we're talking about
this season. Oh, yeah. Spoilers.
The way it ends for Loki is perfect for the character. This whole time he's been like, obviously he changed a lot. The original Loki that we got, obviously this is a variant, but this is what the original Loki basically wanted. He didn't know this wasn't exactly what it was, but he wanted to be like this larger than life figure.
And he wanted the crown. He wanted the throne.
It doesn't get any, the throne and the crown don't get any fucking bigger or heavier than the role that he has taken on. And I think Lauren looked it up after the show. I think he transformed from the god of chaos or mischief to the god of story with this.
Yeah, and I kept, you know, when I would watch reviews and breakdowns and stuff by streamers on YouTube about this, there's a God Loki run, or like a Agent of Chaos comic book run. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That kind of goes into this where he becomes the god of stories like that, which is interesting because if we are getting an Eternals 2, Sprite is also a god of stories, is she not?
Maybe.
I'm not sure if I'm using the right name there, but the little girl who came
for the redhead. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Because that was her whole thing. I remember one of my favorite takeaways from I'm just blanking on the name. Eternals. It was her telling the story of Gilgamesh to all the people there, and that's how we got the Epic of Gilgamesh and some of the stuff like that.
Maybe you're right.
So I wonder if that's another thread that you can kind of pull on down the road. But
yeah, interesting. But is it episode 6? I mean, and then again, like He Who Remains, all of it. You're on the same page though.
Yeah, it's He Who Remains who does a lot of the heavy lifting in this here. I think that's great. There's also this is going to be in What My Age the Best. From this could also be a rewatchable scene, but when Loki finally goes through he learns, becomes a master in physics and all that stuff, right? And he gets Timely to go and actually launch the loom. That whole, I was so invested in that. I was kind of like on the edge of my seat. It's riveting, yeah. Riveting television there. Even though we've seen that play out already and we knew the outcome, but like every step was like, oh, is he going to make it? Is he going to blow up here? What's going to happen? And I kept waiting for it to something to go wrong. And it worked, but it didn't work at the same time.
It was, it was good stuff. It really, like, honestly, like that episode alone was just, that I don't know if I can give it a 10 out of 10, but like that was as good an episode as we've seen from any of the Marvel shows.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was saying in the tweet length review, is that, you know, we're overrating this because we've been disappointed by a lot of endings in Disney Plus shows, but this was just so good. This is top tier, you know, season finale type stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like, honestly, part of me is like, you know, given it an 89, is like I felt bad about that when I first came to it, but I was like, there's so, like, again, we talked about how things kind of get so like complex where it's just like you can't fully take in everything, even with the subtitles on. Mm-hmm. But like that also speak, like it was a noticeable flaw in the show, or annoyance, I guess, in the show, but everything else was so good. And from the end of episode 4, where it's like, oh shit, it's like things are ending, from there till the end of episode 6, amazing. Like wouldn't change a single thing with how that was done. It was so good.
Yeah, no, absolutely there. And I think, you know, again, the He Who Remains, just like I was in the, I don't know, was it episode 6, the season finale of episode 1 last year, yeah, where I was hanging on every word that he was saying, and those conversations, I'm like, oh my God, like trying to take out any little bit of morsel for like a peek of what's ahead. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing once again. So again, the snake eating its tail for me, literally, as the viewer there at the final episode of season 2. So really great job there.
Yeah.
Rank Tom Hiddleston's performances as Loki, because, you know, now that the actor strike is over, he went on, I don't know, one of the late night shows, Kimmel, Fallon, something, and said that this was a nice goodbye to the character. Said something along those terms,
but he also
caused a big tiffy, and he had to clarify that. He's like, yeah, you know, I've said goodbye twice before, so I wouldn't be surprised if I come back again, but who knows? So I wonder what that really means. Is that damage control of something that he slipped out on a TV show, or did he really misspeak? And he was like, no, I'm probably going to be back.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but nevertheless, this is his last time as Loki.
This would be a great, great send off for the character, because, you know, in the court, if everywhere else, like, you have no reason to bring him back in the mix. As far as everybody else is concerned, he is no longer with us. So leave it alone. I mean, maybe, you know, if the MCU doesn't get rebooted and it's around for a lot longer, and then you want to bring him back at some point way down the line, okay. But you don't have reason to throw him back in the mix. It's again like a perfect send off. But for me, ranking Hiddleston's performances as Loki, which range from when he was 29 till where now he's 42 years old, mm-hmm. Crazy. But I would start
that
with
nuts. Wow.
Thor Ragnarok, then the Avengers, and then Loki season 2. From mm-hmm. there, Infinity War, but obviously not in it as much. Then Loki season 1, and then I would say it's a pretty significant drop off for everything else there. Thor the Dark World, What If, and then I put Endgame behind What If just because he's barely in.
Yeah, what's he in Endgame? Oh, just going back in time with the space.
Where we get the start of Loki season 1.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I think we're kind of close to it. So I love the Avengers Loki. I think that's great. He was one of the great first villain, or one of the first great villains, I should say, yeah. In Marvel there. And then I just kind of put Loki the series as number 2 there. I really like everything from, there's a lot of growth there for me throughout. Differentiating is kind of tough for me.
Sure.
On those there. Then Infinity War, I love his sacrifice play. I think that's pretty great. Mm-hmm. Thor Ragnarok is a fun time, getting back to see him kind of being a little bit light, a little bit playful. And then Thor 1 and 2, I'll just throw them all together there. I forget what he is in What If. I don't really care for What If. you know, that's what killed my other podcast there. So we just gotta, I just want to wipe that from my memory. And then we'll put Endgame last.
Yeah. Sorry, things, I had a little bit of a technical hiccup.
No, you're good. You're loud and clear on my end right now. But yeah, so I would say that's about it there. But Avengers definitely number one for me.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with any of that. I think if I was to lump in like Loki show all just together, that's it. I would definitely still keep it at my number three. Mm-hmm. And it's funny too, like just another thing, thinking about Hiddleston as Loki, there's one thing when I'm watching it, we've seen it in the past, but he loves to do like the, almost like he just got punched in the gut and then he like jumps out, like he like snaps back up. It's like
and his hair flips, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the MCU version of the bend and snap.
That's great. I love that. That's good stuff there. And it's a shame too, because on that late night show, whatever one it was, you know, he has short hair, and there's another movie where he's kind of like, you know, kind of like a jungle survivalist guy.
Yeah.
And he has short hair in that. And I just think that black hair is such a strong black, long hair, strong look. You should just wear that all the time. Like
his light
that
hair
looks very good at him.
I think his normal look, I think, is light hair.
Yeah. 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 He's got like dirty blonde, light brown hair, and it's short.
Yeah. It's
like, you know, the long hair is a good, strong look for him. So I wish he went back to that. Talk to whoever's doing makeup and all that stuff, the wig work, and just make that happen. You know?
Yeah. There you go. What do you think's going to age best from season two of Loki?
Well, that scene that I was talking about earlier, I thought that was really good when Victor Timely finally complete getting out to the loom and getting that set up. That whole kind of setup there with him, Loki repeating all the lines because he's been through everything, and then everyone's kind of looking around. They're like, "What's going on?" He's kind of moving through things at like 1.5 speed, trying to get everything done. I thought that was really cool. The practical set, the practical effects and set design were great throughout this. I love the TVA with that like 60s, maybe 70s kind of retro look, but everything's in the future. I also love the 1893 set episode where they go to the Chicago World's Fair. Then you had his whole little, you know, neighborhood of Victor Timely around him. I thought all of that was really cool. Again, such a big change of pace from not being in front of a green screen or a blue screen where everything is just heavy CGI. I thought that was a really, really nice change of pace. What else do I have here? The cyclical story. You know, I thought that was very interesting. I don't know if that was something that was planned out from season one to kind of complete to season two, or if they were able to connect all those dots in season two. I think both are, you know, could be done effectively here. So I'm not sure what the case was there. Loki and Mobius's relationship. I thought that, I know you didn't love Mobius that much, but again, that's such a huge part of the show. There was times where I just wanted to see them on their buddy cop adventure. And there were some points where some characters jumped in and I felt like they were just really ruining that vibe. And I just almost wanted them to get out and it's like, just give me more Mobius and Loki.
Look, I haven't always been like anti Owen Wilson, but this is one of those instances where it's like we talk about, like when you get actors who were stars before they take on these roles, especially with an actor like Owen Wilson, where he just plays the same role pretty much all the time, just slightly changed up a little bit here and there. Like, I just feel like Owen Wilson is not Dupree from You, Me, and Dupree, but at the same time, like I still feel like he's playing himself still. It's just not a bum in unlike in You, Me, and Dupree, which we watched like in the last 2 months or whatever.
I was gonna say that's an odd choice to pull from You, Me, and Dupree out of the Owen Wilson discography.
I feel like we watched it like at least as late as August recently as August, whatever it was, but anyways, so my point was though, if they just said, you know what, Mobius is actually Owen Wilson, if they actually did that, I would have loved Mobius. I almost wish that's what they did.
But see, I think it works. I hear what you're saying, and sometimes that is tough because then you just see like Brad Pitt on the screen and no one else. Like I get that completely. But I think Mobius, and I know he's the co-star of this show, but in like the grand scheme of the MCU, he's really a bit character. So I think that works, you know. So I think that plays a little bit more. He's not a hero, he's just a dude.
Yeah.
Dude 100%. Loves jet skis. So I think that works a little bit more.
100%. Like, I'm saying all this and I still gave the show an 8.
Yeah.
Not taking away that much, but if you go and make this like an Owen Wilson variant, then I would give, then this would have been like an, like I would have liked both seasons way more than I did. Like it would have, oh, that would have been something that would have retroactive, would have been outstanding if we find out that's what Mobius's life actually was. Like he's a broke ass Owen Wilson or whatever. Oh, anyways.
We kind of had that. We almost had a moment. There's a world, there's a timeline in this where they go back instead of going to the 70s to go hunt Brad there as a movie star. You know, they go back and find Mobius and he's just going around going wow yeah, wedding crashers, you know, maybe that's a more timely pull.
Speaking of timely, for one of the age best for me, so Victor Timely, OB, and Loki, outstanding performances across the board. There were quite a few good ones, but those three stood out more than anybody for at least the live action characters. Miss Minutes was another amazing one. She was out of her friggin' mind, and I was totally here for all of it.
The lover thing kind of lost me a little bit there.
It was out there, but yeah. She was so unhinged and like, hey, like you're dealing with artificial intelligence. Weird shit's gonna happen.
That's true. So do we assume that she, maybe this is unanswerable questions. Do we have that down there?
I thought they said that she was artificial intelligence.
No. Do we assume that she's back? She's completely reset, though.
Oh, they said she is. We saw her back, but she is reset. Like at the end of.
Can we trust that? Is she fully wiped, though? You know what I mean?
That's a fair unanswerable question. Is she? And actually, that did cross my mind, but I was like, I mean, we know we can't trust her. So it's not, I don't know if it's unanswerable. And then kind of a lot of just echoing what you were talking about, like the finale is going to age tremendously well, excuse me. The explanation of the loom being a failsafe, to have it all be this crazy wild goose chase, and it's like, it was always preserved for this, and it totally makes fucking sense. Sometimes it hits like fine. Sometimes when you do that though, the wild goose chase is like, well, what the fuck? Then what do we just spend our last like 2 hours, or in this case, 6 hours doing? But it's like, no, it makes perfect sense how no one would fucking know, but this one rat bastard. And then it all makes perfect sense and still fits his narrative.
Also about the fun you have along the way, you know?
I mean, I'm generally about that, but there are some times where it's still like, it can be annoying. Either way. And then He Who Remains, like the use of him in this is outstanding. It just, the end and everything, like the way he just, like when it's like, when Loki finally figures it out and he's like, you finally figured it out. This is your first time. Do you really think I was going to let her kill me? It's like, he just totally... He's still He Who Remains, but it's like a different He Who Remains still, where he's not as polished.
He turns that back on too. He does, right? No, absolutely. And I was almost wondering. He felt like a little bit more, like he was talking with more slang this time around.
R.I.P.H.W.R.
Yeah. All this stuff. Yeah. So it wasn't exactly like, I don't know. That did kind of throw me out of it for a second. I was like, wait, was he like this in the first one? But
I was thrown. Yeah. For a moment I was thrown. But then once he starts explaining things, he gets back to like, being who he is. So I enjoyed that, but
he remained to be.
What'll age the worst?
You mentioned Timely here, because this is going into what's my age the worst for me. Because the stutter didn't work for me. It bothered me at times. I think where Jonathan Majors does such a good job of chewing the scenery as He Who Remains, him chewing the scenery as Victor Timely didn't land as me. I found it kind of annoying at times there. Just overall, like I can, like the point that sticks out the most to me is when they're working on the loom and he brings out the prototype for his thing, and then he's like, oh, wait, did you say a hot cocoa machine? I'd really like to see that. Then he gets taken. I'm like, well, all right, what? Like, this is stupid. Like,
That was one of the weirdest things of, like, one of the oddest things of the entire season. It's just, like, I get that this is a guy who's a smart individual, but there's so much, like, the TVA for anybody is just, like, a what the fuck? Like, once you get
into it. And he just got rushed, like, 200 years into the future.
So all of that, I get how he's just having these odd moments, but that was one thing that was, like, felt like it was... The writing not great, and honestly, the acting was kind of odd in that moment too. So I don't know.
It was all just to get him taken by Ravonna, Miss Minutes again. And it's like, can't we think of like another way? I think that's that was right, right?
Yeah.
You probably watched that episode sooner than I did, but whoever, yeah, however yeah, he got taken. Yeah.
He got taken by the Brad or whatever the hell.
That's right. Yeah.
But anyways, and I still think using the hot cocoa machine, they could have done it and it still could have been like more palatable. I just think like the way it was written and the way it was delivered, all of it was just like clunky.
But I did like him meeting OB and them kind of going back and forth at first. I thought that was very charming.
Yeah.
And another honorable mention, the Cube of Death. Pretty cool torture device.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. What do I feel like? Yeah,
that kind of gets lost in the shuffle because so much gets thrown onto you in the last episode that like it's relatively meaningless. Like that whole storyline of Brad and who is a general? What's her name? General Dax.
Yeah,
General Dox. There, all of that could have just been like gone to the wayside.
Yeah, but that was it could have. But that cube thing was.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That ending, it makes sense that they didn't show it, obviously, but I'm like, this is for a Disney Plus show. This is pretty friggin' gruesome, even though I know, not seeing it.
I wish they did show it though. I really wish they did show it because if we're supposed to be so evil and Ravana is like led this general that we're led to believe of this army where she was kind of like a key player in helping Kang take over everything. You know, like she's pretty ruthless. I would like to see that. Also, that this kind of goes into what age the worst a little bit, but the telling rather than showing. And there was a couple times when they're talking about like timelines are getting completely erased, and Hunter B-15's like these are billions of lives that are being lost. It means nothing to me as the viewer. To just show lines getting erased on a screen and then someone saying that's billions of people go there. Let's see it. Let's see a montage of time, people going into spaghetti form. You know what I mean? Like, I think some stuff like that was kind of frustrating. And that's where I was like kind of falling off in the season. Mm-hmm. Now it picks up, you know, when we get away from the Brad and the General Doc storyline. And some of the Sylvie stuff, I thought Sylvie was completely misused this season. That's who I was referring to when I'm like, we're getting all this great stuff between Loki and Mobius, and then Sylvie kind of ruins everything. And in fact, like, she's like the foil of the whole series. Like, yeah. She's the reason why we're in the mess that we're in.
She was definitely one of the brighter spots for me in season one. In season two, yeah, she wasn't used as well as she could have.
I didn't really get it. She was very angry at Loki to start things off, and that was confused. I remember putting this in the group chat. I don't know if you had read that or saw that, but it just seemed like she had gotten what she wanted at the end of season one. And they kind of end on a good note between Loki and Sylvie. Like, even though they kick each other, you know, they kind of get into a fight, they come to some sort of like heart-to-heart moment. She kills He Who Remains and kind of like saves Loki, kicks him away to safety.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets what she wants. So then when he shows up there, she's like very angry at him. And I don't understand where that's coming from.
Yeah. That felt a little odd to me in that moment too. I was like,
and her mullet too. I didn't really care for the mullet.
when he showed up though, and she was angry, I was like, did they have like, I know they fought at the end, but like, did they have?
No, I had to go back and watch it just to like remind myself. And I'm like, no, like they fought, but they also kiss. And they also have this moment where he's like, I'm not going to stop you. Do what you're going to do or whatever. He kind of like throws his hands up and it's like, I'm not going to fight you anymore. And she kicks him out of the room and then she kills Kang.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends on like everything that she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just kind of like the motivation behind it. That felt like it wasn't really fully thought out. And the rumor was that she was supposed to be the one who sits at the end of time and is really controlling the TVA. And it was supposed to be I don't know how true this was, but the actress who played General Dox was going to be an older version of Sylvie.
Oh.
And there was good, but they maybe shifted around her characters. Maybe that was just rumor and hearsay. I don't know. But that was something that was getting floated out there. And then they changed it around.
If you had done that where Sylvie was holding it at the end, that would have been such a, like, it was, that would have felt tough.
It's Tom Hiddleston's show. It's Loki. So to have, you know, again, to make her at the end, like, I don't know. I don't know how well that would have played over.
I mean, look, I'm saying now, you know, who knows, because I received the alternative, but it's
right.
It was right that they did it with the right Loki, because if it was the other Loki, it's like such a huge shift in the character. As much as we've seen this Loki change a ton from when he first got brought into the TVA, everything he did tracked. Like, the writing of that character was spot on. Obviously, Tom Hiddleston does a great job as Loki. He's always done a great job as Loki. If they had done that differently, the general doxing might have been interesting if it was a Sylvie variant or whatever, however you justify it. They have the right Loki at the end of time there.
And what I will say, this is something that aged the best for me. And again, this kind of also gets wiped from my memory because this happened in episode like 2 or 3. And then like so much other stuff, important stuff happens. But when they're chasing Brad down in the 70s England, and you get to see Loki use his magic. Yeah. There's some really cool magic in here that you get to see, because in this show, because he doesn't, you know, the power use of magic isn't allowed in the TVA, right? So it's like you kind of forget that he's a god, and they kind of forget that too. They mention it a couple times. Loki's like, "Hey, we're gods. Like we can make this happen, right?"
That was another thing with the writing that was really good when he said that, Sylvie, because she still is Loki, when Sylvie said that, that sounds like something God would do, and then we're playing God, whatever it is, he's like, well, we are gods. I was like, oh, are we getting the old Loki back? Is he getting evil again? I love that.
No, yeah, and I thought that was great. And again, when you see him down in that British alley and you see the horns come out and he's like playing all the steampunk gangsters, you know, and he's kind of doing that body manipulation or whatever. All very, very cool stuff there. So that also aged the best to me. But anything else for what aged the worst?
I mean, the biggest one is, it's just kind of one thing for me, but obviously it's a big one. I think the entirety of the season, like, rewatchability wise, it's not going to be great just because there is so much to kind of process. And there are certain things that, maybe they were helpful for later on at the end of the show. But I feel like if I want to rewatch Loki now, knowing all the stuff that goes on, I'm probably just going to watch the last 3 episodes of that.
Right.
Fourth one is awesome. And then it just sets off this chain of events where it's all like Tom Hiddleston. As much as he was there throughout all of it, it wasn't really as heavy on him until episode 4. And then it goes to another level in 5 and then obviously 6.
Yeah, no, absolutely there. And I agree. And maybe, you know, someone who's a little smarter than us can watch this and then get something, you know, really wrap their heads around it. So I don't know. Maybe it does. But if you want to commit to it, yeah, it's all about your commitment.
100%.
Where do we go from here? Where are the unanswerable questions?
So who actually wrote the TVA guide between Victor Timely and Obi?
I love this question. I this is like a chicken or the egg, right?
100%. You have no clue. They do a great job with it in here, but it's also like, you know, I feel like the way things ended where, you know, the child Victor Timely is waiting for, like, he looks around over his shoulder as if he's waiting for the TVA book. Like, maybe that implies that it ends up being OB, but I don't know, man.
Well, so this goes into another good question here, and it kind of goes into some news that may have folded into trending now, but we saved it for here of what happens to Kang. So there's a little bit of news that came out. Joanna Robinson, who is the author of the MCU book, that just recently came out, is also a co-host of a Ringer podcast. I think it's called House of R, House of M, something like that. But anyway, deals with all kind of pop culture lore, comic books, Lord of the Rings, all that stuff, prestige TV, all that stuff. So they're talking about a review of Loki season 2. And they said Jeff Loveness, who was what, Nick, one of the original writers on Loki? Yeah. Is that correct?
And also wrote Quantumania.
I think it was he's a Rick and Morty guy. He was slated to write Kang Dynasty, but now she said she got confirmation that he's no longer doing this.
Right.
So this kind of can be, if you take the information from the Variety article, where one executive or bigwig there was saying that the Kang storyline is fucked because after watching the episode six of Loki there, the season finale. So this all kind of comes into like, all right, maybe they're trying to shift away from Kang, who is not really working, maybe not really working or getting the type of hit that they hoped, coupled with Jonathan Majors' legal troubles and what's going to happen there. So the theory that she posed, and I think this is kind of an interesting out, is that the way that the story ends, and when they show that scene specifically of a young Victor Timely looking back when he's filling those candles, looking for that book, is that Loki says, he's like, no, we can change the formula, right? We can change the formula there and just kind of rework everything that He Who Remains did to keep everything in place. What if that reworking was eliminating all the Kangs, that kind of pushing, like not like killing all the Kangs, but making all of the other Kangs not become evil?
Yeah.
And so those little, so he doesn't get the book. So he doesn't, you know, develop the time loom and all this other stuff. So
like, they definitely did a good job of like, if they wanted to move on from Kang.
Yes. Yeah, so like maybe he's erased from the timeline now,
or if they have to, they have put it in a position where that could happen. And it goes so far, and I think we weren't talking about this on the show, but beforehand, there's a scene, I believe it's the end of episode two, if not three, where we see Renslayer, Miss Minutes, both at the end of time, and then there's the dead He Who Remains. And I think we get it at the start of the next episode, where it's like, we don't need him. Like they're talking about He Who Remains, but in the end, it's like, this feels like a meta comment on Kang in general. Yeah. Like the MCU can move forward on him. Now, that all said, where I think they can move on from Kang, and even they could move on from Kang now and then like give it time and then come back to the character after everybody keeps talking about Doom. By the way, everybody's talking about Doom. If everybody's talking about Doom as the thing, that means it's almost certainly not going to fucking happen.
I know, right?
It's so obvious.
It's Tom Cruise's Iron Man.
Yeah, Mephisto, all of it.
Yeah.
But the other thing to point out, too, on the opposing view, and it seems like friend of the show Casey Walsh is on this side of things from he's not reporting anything, but he's highlighting these dots that are being connected here. Kevin Wright, Loki producer, says that Michael Waldron is working on both upcoming Avenger films, which would be Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. He also mentions how much Waldron loves these worlds, Kang and the Multiversal Wars, as he helped create them. And this is from an interview on the Phase Zero CB pod, which I think is comicbook.com podcast, like their Marvel show. So
okay,
a lot of stuff going on, but it's been like that since Jonathan Majors started having the issues that he's had off the field. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't know where we go from here, but I do think that we're in agreement that they put themselves in a pretty good spot to move on from
to one way or the other and still have outs there. Yeah. Yep, it's kind of like if we were to go with Joanna Robinson's theory there, it's kind of like, going back in time to kill baby Hitler. Like maybe you don't kill baby Hitler, but maybe you hit on his mother the night that he meets his father.
Right.
You know, the first time they meet, and then they never become parents. And then Hitler's never created, maybe 100%. Something like that. You're not really affecting, you're not really changing history, but you're just giving a little bit of push.
And on the other side of it, where it's like, we still have all these multiverses, but it's like being controlled differently. Like, was it, what's his face? He Who Remains said, like, all my variants are created already. Like, we have all the multiverse, like all the different timelines at the end of it. But like he said, like, all my variants have been created. So you can go either way with this.
Yeah. So it's, and again, we don't really know what we're talking about here. It's all very convoluted. So that's probably by design in a certain way, or just muddy the water so you can't really see the bottom.
100%.
At the end, where was Ravonna at the end of her final scene? And what did she see at the end of the series there? So we see her in like, there's kind of a pyramid going on there, and there's a big purple light that she sees.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw this out there on Twitter where she's at, what was that place that Loki went to where he met the variant Lokis?
Yeah, like, it's like, I don't know what it's called, but it's like at the end of time there, right? It's it's right before there, and it's like Eliath is the monster, right? Was that?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's what it was. So I think that's where she is. It looks very much like that. If there was a pyramid in that place, then that would probably answer. Because
she
the question.
Was pruned.
Yeah, probably makes sense. Yeah. That's where that would be there where she went. So yeah, that's all I got for you there.
Now my other thought was with the pyramid back there. Is that where the Rama Tut variant of Kang was? And does she get link up with him? Because at the end of Quantumania, when they bring all those Kangs together into the arena, and we see the three major Kangs there, mm-hmm. the one who seems to be the leader was the Rama Tut one.
Right. That would make sense.
So I don't know. Maybe it could be something there too. But again, who knows what's happening with Kang.
Right.
Does the MCU adapt? This might be kind of overreaching my boundary here, but does the MCU adapt Doctor Doom's Secret War storyline into Loki, where he is controlling everything? Maybe he's pulling heroes to a safe space or all to one timeline. To get a battle world thing going on here. Could it kind of like how they take different characters and morph them into one. If it's not Doctor Doom who replaces Kang, could Loki kind of assume some of Doctor Doom's comic book storylines? Or is that bad?
I don't think so. I really do think that like Hiddleston could come back as Loki. I don't think it's going to be as prominent as what it's been. So no. I mean, it's a fair question, but I don't think so.
All right.
My last one is how did Casey, who I think is known as Frank when he was at Alcatraz?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
My other unanswerable question is how did he end up in jail? What did he do?
I don't know, but I liked that. I was really interested. And at times I was a little frustrated by that episode because it was like so much of a bottle episode and it's moving backwards. And I'm like, no, give me more of what's going on with the story. But it was really cool to see, again, him escaping from Alcatraz and particularly pulling on the heartstrings of Mobius there with being the single dad raising two kids on his own and then having to leave him there. But the Casey stuff was interesting because he's so feckless in the TVA. He's just kind of like a buttoned up nerd, mm-hmm. you know, so to see him kind of get a little bit of edge to him was cool.
Friggin' like Mobius one of my favorite things was him trying to sell B-15, like the doctor version of her, mm-hmm. trying to sell her on jet skis. It's like, what are you doing?
Right yeah, now? we got great financing options here. but yeah, I thought that was really cool. But how did he get to jail? I don't know. You know, you don't want to get too crass with it.
No, but it's. I think it's. I'd be curious if the writers know.
What do you do to get sent to Alcatraz, too? It's not just any jail.
Yeah. It's not just any jail. So now he could be like this big time bank robber. He did bring up like going to a bank vault. So it sounds like he's more than that. Oh,
that's a good point. I forgot that there. Yeah. Yeah. He's probably a bank robber. Yeah. Had some Tommy guns, something like that.
It was the 60s. But I mean, yeah. I mean, how dark do you want to darken this character go? I don't know.
Yeah. That's interesting stuff there. I like that. I think that's it for that one. Okay. Who had the best performance by a side character?
We're by and large in agreement here. It's between He Who Remains, Obi, in Miss Minutes for me. I think I'm gonna go with OB here because he was in it more. OB is Cal Ripken, but He Who Remains is Mark McGuire.
Okay. I like OB, you know, if this might borderline on the, you know, recurring character, bit player sort of thing. I love OB. He Who Remains stole the show for me. Again, I think Jonathan Majors as He Who Remains, with his ability to chew scenery, even if his accent was a little off this time around, really works for me.
Maybe we should create a separate category, and then obviously just one, you know, from time to time. But like side character and bit character, because because it just, you know, it's. It happens to us. But anyways, I got no problem with going with He Who Remains as the winner on this one. Lost the show?
My first thought was Sylvie, because I was very frustrated and disappointed by her usage here Also because, again, she's like the root of most of the problems that occur in this whole series, not even just this season, but particularly at the end where he's got to try to, like, this is talk about a meta commentary here. Loki is trying to convince Sylvie in conversations over and over and over again and trying to convince logic to her. And she is just so emotionally rage bound that she can't be talked to. And he repeats this thousands of times and still can't convince her. It's that's got to be an allegory for men just talking with women on the general. You're a married man. You might understand that a little bit there.
We communicate lovingly. I don't know.
But yeah, so I think just with her misusage, that moment that I was just describing and her mullet, that's a trifecta for a loss there.
You raised some fair points on Sylvie for her having lost, unfortunately. I can't deny that. I don't think she gets my vote. I do think timely is, I think from a, how the character was handled, Sylvie. But I think from what happens to the character, Victor Timely gets the rawest deal in all of this.
Oh yeah, he gets killed a couple of times over, right? And and then he gets wiped off the timeline completely. He doesn't even become the person that he was supposed to become at the end of it.
100%. It's I mean, no one suffers. He's in between. He's getting chased all over friggin' time and everything like that. And he has no clue what the hell's going on. So he gets it the worst. But him and Miss Minutes were my two losers that I came up with, but you got some other ones that make sense, or at least one of them does.
Ravonna loses for me a little bit, because I felt like she was kind of misused, or her story was kind of weird. You know, we kind of get that love story that kind of happens between Timely and Ravonna there, but she also, they end the season one with her being a principal or a teacher, and they end her in a schoolroom, and they never return back to that at all. And I kept waiting for that, like her backstory to get a little bit, delve into a little bit more. Again, with showing or with telling and not showing here, they tell us that Ravonna was a key figure in winning the multiversal war between all the Kangs, but we don't get a flashback to it. We don't even get like a little figurine scene, which we got in, I don't know if it was Quantumania or the first Loki season, but you know, he has the little black figurines that kind of describe everything as he's telling the story of the great multiversal war. I don't know if that rings a bell to you.
Oh, it thought it did, but no, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, they don't show anything of it. They just say that she was a key factor into, well, how? Mm. Tell me more about it. So I thought, again, her time in there, like, she's in there a lot, but we don't really get a lot of information of her, and she ends up in an odd place.
I couldn't believe pruned. Yeah, the first time around, I was like, "Holy shit!" How is Mobius on your list of losers? I am actually surprised by this one.
I love it. He loses the show a little bit because he leaves his kids. Now I know he's told that he's not really leaving them, that they bring him back at any point in time. But at the end of the season, he's talking to Hunter B-15 and he's leaving the TVA, right? So he's going back to his family.
Right. But it seems, I think he's going back to that exact moment where he originally left. That's the whole thing.
Okay. So maybe he does win there. So I'm wondering, like,
no, go ahead.
What does he do with the other Mobius?
I don't think there is an,
just him. Okay.
It's just him. He's going back to, like, right after that moment where he left with Loki, he's showing up, right? Supposedly. It's what it seems like.
And I guess so. Cause like the time slipping thing at a certain point, like Loki goes into his former self. It's not like him watching himself. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Okay. But this thing with time too, I feel like I saw this in something else too, but it's like, we got stuff going on. No, I think it was all in this. Like, we have stuff that's going on right now. And like, if we don't get back in time, it's like, well, time, if you're in like this place right now, like if you're in the future right now, all the stuff that's happened in the past has happened already. And if you go back to that specific spot that you want, then the other shit hasn't happened. No matter how long you are here in the future, it doesn't matter till you actually go to the past. And I know the TVA itself kind of adds like a different layer to it, but I feel like I saw that in something else where it's never the fucking same. And I time travel, as much as I've liked this show, time travel to me is one of like the, just if you mix that in with a show, you're playing with fucking fire, a show or a movie.
Right. Yeah. Because there's a couple of theories, right? There's the Back to the Future theory where like you do something and then it changes the future. There's the that's like the butterfly effect, right? Then there's a branch timeline or something. There's all these different stuff that you can go off of here.
But it's just, you're always opening yourself up to unnecessary questions. Whereas like, if you're just trying to tell a good story, it could be in a book or a comic too. It's like, if you can avoid that, I would just recommend fucking avoiding that. I don't around it, but it just, I don't know. I'm not big on time travel in general. So from a story standpoint, at least.
Anyway, I'm with it. It gets convoluted that way. I hear you.
Yeah. Who won the show, Wes?
It's Tom Hiddleston. It's his show. To see that character come full cast. I saw someone else tweet this out, but when you talk about like S tier casting, he's really gone up there with the Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man, Chris Evans as Captain America, you know, all of that stuff. I think he's in that right now in that group.
I've always thought that Tom Hiddleston as Loki was friggin' outstanding. He was so good from the jump. I mean, even in Thor, where it was like a so-so first movie, even though for some reason now everybody wants to like gush over it for some reason because of revisionist history.
I just disappear.
You disappeared. Yeah,
this is happening again.
It's perfect for this fucking episode.
That's true. I'm on another timeline.
Yes, there we go. But in general, like Loki's one of like Tom Hiddleston has been one of the best castings that we've seen in the MCU, and that is saying a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Here, so once again, you can hear my voice, but you can't see my face. That's Loki season 2. Nick gave it an 89. I gave it an 86. That's good for an 87.5, tied for number 18 in our CMM MCU rankings. Not far behind Loki season 1, which got an 89.5. So if you haven't watched it, go stream it now on Disney Plus, 6 episodes. And where we watch this in 2 different ways, Nick, you pretty much binged this by all intents and purposes here. I went week to week. Do you think that changed the way you viewed this at all?
I think that it would have. I think it would have had an impact on like the first 3 for me a little bit more so. Maybe the first 2, but like once it got to 4, I was like, "Oh, I just need more." So I was fortunate to have the ability to binge the last 3 in the end.
I think I might have had a score more similar to yours had I binged it.
Probably
just because I wouldn't be stuck on those lulls at episodes like maybe 2 and 3.
That's true.
There and just waiting like, all right, where are we going? We for 14 days until episode 4 there.
That's fair.
But yeah. So, all right. Interesting stuff. Go check it out. Now go get your tickets because the train is leaving the station.
Choo-choo bitches.
All right, what'd you do this weekend, Nick? What'd you watch this
weekend? So watched a couple different things. The missus and I have started Good Omens season 2, which is David Tennant and Michael Sheen. And this is Neil Gaiman Terry Pratchett, their novel. And God, the first season was so good. And I think when I watched it with Lauren, she was rewatching it. And then starting this season, it's like, God, this is even better than the first season. It's David Tennant and Michael Sheen are such a great pairing. Like when we're done, it's a little bit on the later side for me. I got to, put the audio together afterwards when we're done. But all I want to do now is go back and like we watched an episode before you and I recorded this. I want to go and watch more of this. I want to fall asleep to it. So they're like the story is interesting in and of itself. It's like heaven and hell demon stuff, which, what I'm all about.
Yeah.
But they're acting chemistry and then the writing is so I absolutely love it. If you watch the first episode and you like it, it's available on Prime, you're gonna love the entire thing. Like it's that fucking good. Two are amazing. And then also we watched The Good Son, which is Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood.
What sparked this?
I think Lauren had put it on our like movies that we want to watch list. I think she might have had it on, like, she had her own. So before we met, she had her own list of like movies she wanted to watch, and then she just turned it into like our joint list. And like, I had movies
master
I wanted to
spreadsheet
show her. Exactly. Yeah. Well, now we use Letterboxd. Is that one?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can find some of our CMMCU rankings on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have that one for ourselves. I just keep track of what we're watching. And yeah, so like The Good Son was one that she had wanted to watch, and we
landed on. Culkin's good on that. He's a little shit.
Oh, he is. It's Macaulay Culkin. It's Elijah Wood, and then Elijah Wood's dad, who's not in the movie that long, is an actor we've seen a bunch before. And then the Elijah Wood's aunt, who is Macaulay Culkin's mom, is the mom from The Santa Claus.
Oh, really?
With short hair.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, she's a cold-hearted bitch.
She's not in this at all. No, very nice. But she I think anybody who liked The Santa Claus had like took issue with her in The Santa Claus. But
well, yeah, because the main character turns into Santa Claus. You know, exactly. you can't hate Santa.
Yes, and but nobody's worse than the
Scott Calvin.
Her husband, her new husband.
Neil.
Neil, thank you. I couldn't remember his freaking name. Anyways, but yeah, this is like, I know spooky season has come and gone, but I'm still down for spooky stuff when I can get it. And this is a little dark and twisted. I think it filed under horror, but yeah, Macaulay Culkin is a real monster in this thing.
And this was tough because this was kind of riding the Home Alone fame. So you see him as like America's child. You know, it's like this America's sweetheart type of kid here in the Home Alone, this precocious little 8-year-old. And then he goes right into The Good Son, and it's like completely flips the narrative on its head.
It's yeah. And that's interesting. I didn't know the timing of it exactly. He was really good in it. And Elijah Wood was really good in it as well. He was a little odd at times, like it made sense.
He's an odd guy anyway.
Yes. But it made like weird. Sin City, he's a really fucking weird character.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, like how you have these two things juxtaposed against each other. Obviously, he was Richie Rich at some point, like the original one.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that, like everybody portrayed Macaulay Culkin after that. I know that he had went through a ton of shit over the years, but I just wonder how that impacted their view of him seeing Home Alone and then this.
Yeah, I wonder if he was closer to The Good Son than Macaulay Culkin what's his name?
Kevin McAllister.
Kevin McAllister there, yeah.
Also, Macaulay Culkin's like actual sister, this is like her biggest role I think she ever had.
Good for the sister there, because you get Kieran Culkin, the younger brother. He's grown on to have some success. He was in Billions or Succession or one of those shows.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where, like, 'cause I know he was in something recently.
He's been in a bunch of other stuff too, but that's kind of where he's gotten a lot of his fame from. Yeah.
But that's what I've been watching lately. Wes, what have you been up to?
Just we got family Christmas photos this weekend. You mentioned spooky season. We are balls deep into the Christmas season here. I got new lights to put up on the roof. Last year it was a struggle. You may have heard me chronicle it, putting the lights up on the roof. I did win that battle. I'm going to win this war this year. Have no issues, no pushback. But yeah, so we're getting all that ready. We got the Christmas setup going on. We got the nativity set up. We got the Christmas tree all done. So we're fully ready here, mostly because of time. Yeah. Next week is like Thanksgiving.
And yeah, dude.
Shit, every other day. There's just like, I don't know when we're going to have the time to do it. So we got out in front of it this year.
That's good. Yeah. That's came up on us. Real freaking quick.
It's pretty quick here. Just like the end of this episode, it feels long, but we whipped right through it here.
Oh, so yeah.
I think, you know,
I cannot believe we talked this long. I'm surprised.
When we talk about the MCU shows, they always go long because we like to dive deep and get real in the crevices there. So we hope you're as satisfied as we felt. And next week we'll give you a full review of the Marvels. But till then, same bat time, same bat place.